Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming here from the Voice of America in Washington. I'm Douglas Nkuga. This evening we'll talk about the conflict in Ethiopia and its impact on the region. With us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa 54. Vincent, once again, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
You're very much welcome. And joining us from Durban, South Africa, is regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas.
You're welcome to the show. As I said, we'll be talking about the crisis in Ethiopia, where the government is battling the rebellious northern Tigray region, where the Tigray People's Liberation Front is showing some resistance, and there have been a lot of casualties, and some people have fled the area, a lot of displacement. So, Vincent, Ethiopia is a big player on the continent with a big population. How do you see this one affecting the region in the near term?
Well, to begin with, Ethiopia is technically the home of Africa because of being the headquarters of the Africa Union. So it's very paradoxical that at the place where African leaders are supposed to be sitting and discussing, peace and security across the continent, there should be a conflict. So that on itself kind of puts it on a spot. But more than that, you just have to look at the number of refugees that have crossed the borders to Sudan. You talk about an upward of 41,000. So the regional implication is immediate in the sense that whenever there's a conflict in a country, it's never just about the impact it has internally, but it's how it affects the neighbors, the region. So right now we're seeing Sudan grappling with an upsurge of refugees from Ethiopia, and it can't handle them because Sudan itself is kind of emerging from a prolonged war with Darfur, and economically it's really at a very weak point. So what we're going to see play out in the coming weeks and months is not just on what is going to be happening internally, but how this conflict will have impacted the regional powers, the other countries in that area. We have, there's Djibouti on the other side to the south. There is Sudan. There's, of course, Eritrea. And so we might see even more of the implication of this conflict in the coming weeks and months.
Suleiman, what's your take?
Douglas, with the COVID problem, which is hovering all over the world, it is very unfortunate that such a problem can arise on our continent. First of all, before even one looks at the regional effect in the region, we have to look at the internal effect itself. Have we really been able to try to understand what is likely to happen? Are the two principals involved, do they know what is ahead of them? Do they know why the world as a whole is worried, why the African Union is sending a delegation in there? Because what is likely to happen is a catastrophe, because you have got two intransigent situations, two intransigent groups. Abiy may have the forces of the federal government, but the Tigrayans are not a walkover. They can resist. We can have a terrible protracted civil war. Not only protracted civil war, because of the nature of the federal system in Ethiopia, you may even find that Ethiopia itself may blow up. There might be an implosion. There might be a breakup of the federal system. Even other areas might, in the process, break away. So we are talking of a situation where you can even have The the dissolution of Ethiopia itself as a state. So first of all, we are dealing with a catastrophe within, and then, as Vincent has said, we have got the problem of the effect in the region. Because remember, Ethiopia has got about 100 million people. Already South Africa ourselves, without even a conflict that side, we are inundated with Ethiopians. Imagine those countries which are close. It means within the Horn of Africa, all countries are likely to get an influx. The immediate one, even Eritrea will get, Kenya will get, Sudan will get, Southern Sudan will get, and even as far as Uganda, you'll find many flocking in through. And what I was talking about COVID is that they are flocking in a situation where we already have economies which are fragile because of the COVID situation, because of the effects of the COVID. So in short, I agree with Vincent that there is likely to be very big implication, not only internally, but also in the region, if the conflict goes ahead and it ruptures.
Vincent, further to that, the Ethiopia, the way its location, as you mentioned, as both of you have alluded to, sits around the neighbors that are fragile countries. We have Sudan, we have South Sudan, we have Eritrea, we have Somalia. That doesn't help matters, does it?
It really doesn't help a lot because, it only adds to more destabilization of the region, but also to a more disturbing image of a whole region, because one wants to always see beacons of hope. One wants to see especially the bigger countries being more stable in a particular region so that you can at least, those countries can become a model, can become an inspiration to the others. We've seen what has been going on in South Sudan. And, you wanted countries like South Sudan to look to the other side and say, you know, we can actually have peace also and have kind of an agreement amongst our different groups. Remember, not long ago, Prime Minister Abiy was actually, one of the people who were seen as being mediators of the talks in the region, in South Sudan, in another regional, regional entities, because he was touted as this person who's got some kind of a very good diplomatic skills. He had achieved certain, political milestones within his own country, got a Nobel Prize. So, Ethiopia has been for some time been seen as the stabilizing force in that particular Horn of Africa region, So to see it implode or possibly get to a situation where it could be into a full-blown internal conflict, that would be so disturbing. And as my brother Suleiman has mentioned it, given the sheer population. And something else that one has to really worry about is that any conflict that takes ethnic overtones, that has something to do with ethnicity, is likely to get to not only fester for quite a while, but it becomes complicated in that even when you reach a political agreement, there are always some bitterness left, because the perception is that that particular group of people has done this kind of thing to us as an ethnic group. And so it becomes very difficult to resolve those issues, because there is a potential of lingering bitterness, the desire to revenge, perhaps in the form of, wishing to take over the leadership of a country so that you can also get your justice. So it's a very, very disturbing development, especially given the nature of ethnic differences in some of those African countries, and particularly in Ethiopia.
Suleiman, and both parties, both the federal government and the TPLF are not giving ground. They don't seem to be anywhere near getting a solution.
Douglas, we are in a, there is a real crisis, because as Vincent has said, the history, we are coming back to the reality that leaders staying in power for many years does not help a country. That after those leaders leave, there is a likelihood of an implosion. There is a likelihood of getting a failed state. Everybody's prayer and expectation was that a bill will be able to contain the situation and don't allow the unfinished businesses. The way Vincent has said, those lingering suspicions. Because remember, the TPLF has been in power for almost 30 years. So within those 30 years, they skew the political power bases, they skew the economic power bases. There is a question of marginalization of some people. So now, immediately Abir took over. He said the TPLF, he accused the TPL, the former leaders of being having been corrupt and having abused the human rights and so on and so forth, and he had to make changes. Many of the TPLF leaders had to be reshuffled. That did not go well with them losing power, because they lose the political power, they lose the economic power. So they had to go into cocoons, and then now the unfinished business of our state formation, as Vincent has said, those ethnic traditional rivalries, the traditional fault lines, they start showing up. Remember, there was an attempt even on the life of Abir. Remember, many of them have gone back to Tigray. Even as we talk, many of them in the civil service feel they are being marginalized. Those in the army, they feel they are being marginalized. We don't know, because there is an information blackout, but the suspicions are there. So because of that, as you have said, each one is holding ground, and the traditional ethnic rivalries are going to surface again, which makes it a very difficult situation. That is why we are saying it is likely to end up into a catastrophe unless efforts are made to stop it before it ruptures.
I see. And for those who are just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. Tonight we're discussing the crisis in Ethiopia and how it might impact the region. Our panelists are Vincent Makori and Suleiman Mugula, and I'm your host, Douglas Mpuga. Gentlemen, I throw this one to both of you. Suleiman there alludes to the idea of having to resolve this thing quickly or somehow. But isn't it ironical that the Ethiopia is the seat of the African Union? What are the leaders doing, other leaders of the African Union? None of them seems to have made a lot of effort, it appears. Let me begin with Vincent.
Yes, and exactly that's how I started with what I see as an irony, a paradox, that the country is actually the headquarters of the African Union. And one of the most important, I think, assignment of the African Union is to seek peace across the continent. And you would expect that the leaders would quickly voice their concerns about the situation categorically, make it clear that there needs to be a more peaceful resolution to this than, full-blown war. But what we have seen over the years is that African leaders are very, very... you feel like they don't want to be involved in any of the situations, because there is a danger of being seen to take sides. I perceive that, you know, one doesn't want to feel like he's criticizing the government in Addis Ababa. But at the same time, they cannot go outright and blame the other side. Now, you would expect responsible leadership across the continent to quickly have converged in Addis Ababa and said, stop this. Let us sit down and talk, both sides, the Tigrayans and those in the government. Let's sit down and talk about this, because there are examples of how badly this kind of conflict can go right in Ethiopia itself. But also, you just have to look in the neighboring Sudan. There was a civil war for two decades before they got to a peace deal in 2005. Do you want to go through two decades before you can finally sit down? Why not do it now? Why don't African leaders say, no, stop it. Whoever, you know, whatever the grievance is, let's both sides stop the threats and the fight, and let's sit and talk. Because eventually, believe it or not, in any conflict, eventually there will be a call for peaceful negotiation. Why wait for people to die? Why wait for the disruption of the economy? Why wait for destabilization of an entire region before you can make it very clear that we need to have a peaceful resolution? So I feel like the African leaders fail the continent. They fail the individual countries. They fail the citizens of Africa. And they really fail the continent as a whole.
Suleiman?
I agree with you. The moment we turned these institutions into clubs of dictators, where the majority of the dictators overshadow the good men, then the whole project of African solution to African solution to African problems became a facade. Because so long as you don't have people with moral authority, people who are leading governments which are responsible, which are democratic, which are transparent, which observe human rights for their people, they don't have any moral authority to go and intervene in another country. They are always nervous. Because now when you look at the countries which are surrounding the area, many of them have got skeletons in their cupboards. Esfawaki, the one of Eritrea. Sudan, the southern Sudan. Sudan, the main Sudan. All right, Kenya is doing well, but they are the only ones there. Go further. You have got Uganda. You have got Rwanda. You have got Burundi. I mean, on the other side, you have got Chad. Now, who can intervene there? When you look at all these nations, many of them don't have credible governments. They have been oppressing their people. That is why Abiy is saying this is an internal issue. Yes, we cannot refuse. The AU has sent a delegation which has got Joachim Kisano, Ellen Johnson, and then Kalema Motlanthe from here in South Africa. They are the ones who are landing in Ethiopia to go and try to mediate. But even the nature of the delegation, I don't know whether they can understand the geopolitics of the area, the internal politics, to be able to attack the problem, to be able to understand the problem. Because at least, as you have said, there should have been someone from the region, if there was a credible leader. For example, in countries have had problems, then we say, let IGAD intervene, which means the countries surrounding, because they understand the nature of the conflict very well. If we had the credible leaders, they are concerned, they are affected very well, so they would make efforts. They would not be shunned off. Just as you saw in Southern Africa, that if there is a problem in Zimbabwe, you need countries in SADC region, Botswana, Zambia, South Africa, so to be able to tackle that problem before even the greater African Union comes in. The regional grouping should be able to solve it. But if the regional grouping itself has got lots of skeletons in cupboards, then the people become helpless. And there we agree with Vincent that they have let down the people of Africa. Now the Ethiopians have to be on the run. They have to scatter. They have to die of starvation. They have to go anywhere. They are sleeping outside. They are in tents all of a sudden, because not only the internal leaders, but even the regional leaders who have helped them, they are also as hopeless as they are.
I see. Vincent, also another thing is maybe the timing couldn't have been worse with the coronavirus pandemic, with the Western powers at back, and then the African leaders listen, minding their own business. That's not a good timing, is it?
I mean, and I think Maula mentioned a bit of that. It's the worst of timing in terms of the pandemic itself, but also the concerns in individual countries. Right now, every country is concerned about how to first stem the increase of COVID-19 cases, how to also handle the economies, which have been devastated by COVID-19. And so this is not the time that you really want to be in a situation where you expect other countries to be too concerned. So, fact is that usually some of these countries never really get involved in a more effective way in helping to resolve regional conflict. But this time, this particular time, is even worse because there are too many things happening in each country globally that you can see the reason why many may not even want to be involved in any form. I mean, it's becoming impossible even to interact, even to visit and talk. And this is creating, situations that in the past would have been, easy to deal with, easy to handle. But right now, even just communication is becoming a problem.
Suleiman, you think that explains the deaf silence of neighboring countries?
Without any doubt, Douglas, because at the moment where the world is, each country is on its knees. Each country is on tenterhooks. The biggest problem at the moment is not even about your neighbor. It's about each individual country. There is a bigger problem, first of all, now, to be able to cope with the pandemic. Many countries are struggling with trying to cope with the pandemic. One, the pandemic itself, and then the effects of the pandemic. And all of them are big issues. So few countries have been able to hold them. Even bigger countries like United States of America, like the whole of Europe, they are still struggling to contain the pandemic. In Africa, many countries are still worried. The numbers are increasing. They don't know at what pace it will increase. The economic effects are so huge. They are patching up here and there to be able to contain them. And everybody is on tenterhooks. So at the moment, the worst challenge one can give a country is to ask them to help when they cannot help themselves. So as you have said, the timing is so bad, and we don't know what will happen because many countries are really in a trap of the pandemic, and they don't have spare time and spare resources to waste on other conflicts or other problems for other countries.
But Vincent, in that vein, there is no way these neighboring countries won't be involved because they have to bear the burden. So they must be figure out a way of how to mediate.
Yeah, I mean, it's inevitable because you cannot not be impacted by what's happening in your neighbor's, backyard. We will see these countries. I mean, they're already involved. For example, Sudan may not be involved in any negotiations right now, but it's feeling the brunt of this conflict in Ethiopia with all the refugees that have gone there. And more, I expect it. There could be up to 100,000 soon. Now, if that happens across the region, these countries will have to find a way to try and find a resolution to this conflict. Problem is, taking too long makes it harder even to resolve. The longer you take, the more entrenched this becomes, and the more the resolution becomes a problem. So there's no way, however difficult it is, however badly timed it is, it would be advisable for these leaders to swing into quick action and have this resolved peacefully. Otherwise, what lessons have we learned from all the conflicts in our regions, whether it's from the DRC, go down south to Angola, Sudan itself, southern Sudan? Why can't the lessons be learned so that we don't have to go through the same cycle, conflict, and then years and years of killings from all sides until you get to a point now that you think you have to talk peace? Why wait 10 years, 20 years to do so?
Suleiman, very briefly, unfortunately, most of the leaders in the neighboring countries, the only solution they think comes to their mind first is militaristic. So that doesn't help much. Very briefly.
That is the biggest problem which we have. As I said, the deficit in governance within the region becomes a problem because we don't have credible people with the credible institutions which can mediate, which can intervene with a fair hand, which will be respected by Abir, which will be respected by Tigray. So you lack. There is a deficit of leadership on the continent. There is a deficit of credible leaders on the continent. The institutions have been so much disorganized by the attempts by some leaders to personalize them, to stay in power forever, that now the countries are no longer existing in substance, that we only have leaders. They have personalized everything, and it's so difficult to micromanage everything, including external affairs.
Well, I think we shall briefly, 10 seconds, Vincent, how do you see the thing ending? Very briefly.
It's very difficult to predict. But either way, whether it lasts short or it takes a bit longer, it's going to be very tragic. I mean, already we are getting reports of people being killed, and I don't think once you start this, you can stop it as quickly. And even if you do, the effect of that, what would have happened, will stay on for a while. So it doesn't end well. As long as there's fighting involved, it does not end as well.
Well, we shall keep our eye and ears to the situation, the crisis in Ethiopia, and how it will impact the region. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleague Vincent Macori, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, once again, thanks very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
You're very much welcome. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can hear our roundtable on the internet. All you have to do to access it is go to our main website, click on Programs, and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Thanks very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, wishing you all the best.
Issues in the News moderator Michael Williams and a panel of prominent Washington journalists as they deliberate the latest top stories of the week. Including numbers show there have been more than 60.4 million reported cases of COVID-19 worldwide, with 1.4 million deaths. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Peter Klose, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's weekend Africa show that provides news, features, and entertainment news, as well as sports about Africa and the world. Tune in, and you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Rain on me. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.